Good evening. I am Denise McBride and I am recording Alex McAndrews of Napier on his experience with Cyclone Gabriel.
Thank you. Well, I guess our experience actually of it started a few days beforehand, actually. So it kicked off on the Monday night, wasn't it? So it was the weekend before we were up with family in Tauranga. And that's when the cyclone was starting to actually come through that area. So yeah, we had some impressive rain and some impressive winds up in that area. So we thought we'd better get home pretty quickly. So we came home and didn't think too much of it, actually, because we heard there wasn't too much of a warning for Napier itself. So we just came home on the Sunday and then went to work on the Monday and expected everything was going to be fine. It was probably about lunchtime on the Monday that my bosses at work, actually, they sort of were looking at the forecast and looking at what was being reported, and they sort of thought, okay, maybe it's a good idea if everyone packs up their stuff and works from home, because it was starting to look a bit serious. So we packed up all our kit. I'm a software developer, so I work in an office with computers. And so I just packed up my laptop, took it home, and then worked the rest of that Monday at home. Didn't think much of it again. I think the Monday night there was a fair bit of wind and a little bit of rain, but nothing what you'd call out of the ordinary. So we all just went to bed, and that was sort of that until we woke up in the morning. And so when we got up on the Tuesday morning, we still had no idea what was sort of going on. But in my spare time, I also volunteer for the Hawke's Bay Coast Guard. So day to day, what we do is we our slogan is we save lives at sea. So basically, if anyone gets into any trouble out in the waters around Hawke's Bay, we go out and we either tow boats home or perform rescues and all that sort of thing. But we're quite a resourceful group of people. And so basically I got a phone call, it was probably just after 7 a.m. on the Tuesday from one of our skippers saying that all of the rivers had basically flooded everywhere. And obviously the first bit of news to come through was about the Esk Valley. And so although it wasn't our area, because obviously we're used to being on the ocean, but this was up the rivers, which was definitely not our usual areas, but we thought we needed to do something to help. So so one of the guys turned up in his utes and grabbed my gumboots and had no idea what to expect. So I think I was wearing just togs, a t-shirt, a jumper, and some gumboots. And we were heading out to the Esk Valley. This was probably around 8 o'clock by this stage on the Tuesday morning. As we were sort of heading up towards the Esk Valley, he got a phone call to say that Waiheke and down Lynx Road had started to flood quite badly. So a number of our Coast Guard volunteers were already helping up in the Esk Valley. So we thought, all right, we'll split up. We'll go our car as well as another one. We'll head down towards Lynx Road and see what we could do to help there. So again, it was pretty eerie because at this stage, we had heard through the phone call that everything had gone crazy, but actually in Napier and driving through the suburban streets, it had stopped raining by this point and the wind had died down, and it just seemed like a relatively normal overcast day. It was quite weird what we were hearing, but not seeing. We got to after Taradao on the expressway, I forget the name of the river there, that first one, just before Pakawai Road.
Tutakuri?
I think, yeah, Tutakuri, mm. That's right. So that was really our first major sort of wake-up call, because we were heading south on the expressway and the water was right up to the bottom of the bridge, almost lapping against it at that stage. And that was unreal, because already at that stage the water was right at the top of the stop banks. And it was quite unreal. So we carried on over that. By that stage, Puckawai wasn't, by the expressway, wasn't flooding. So we didn't think too much of it. Hung a left at the roundabout, hung a right on the roundabout and went down Lynx Road towards the Silky Oak Chocolate Factory. When we got to the chocolate factory, that's where we saw it. That's when you sort of had to pinch yourself, because what we saw is just after the chocolate factory, there was water pouring across the road, absolutely pouring across the road. And there was a couple of cars sitting on the road and they were up to their windows with water rushing past them. And looking at the other end of Lynx Road, sort of across the water, you could see these rapids almost coming down the hill. And it was, I remember me and a couple of the guys that were in the car, we just kind of stood there for a few seconds going, what on earth is happening here? At the same time, we had a couple of farmers turned up and they had a inflatable jet boat. And so they chucked it in the water. And one of our Coast Guard volunteers had also brought a jet ski. So we put that in the water as well. So we basically launched right next to Silky Oak. It was into the vineyard, basically. And what we had heard, we'd seen, I can remember it clear as day because it was really eerie. You could hear, as loud as the water was, what seemed so much louder is you could hear people yelling. And there was various pockets of people that you could just hear yelling. And so you'd just kind of point out in a direction to either the jet ski or the jet boat. I think there's someone that way. And then the jet boat would zip off and the jet ski would zip off. And then you'd just kind of be standing there for a little while going, what on earth is happening? And then thankfully the boat would come back and it would have a couple of people on it. And we had to pull the jet ski out of the water pretty quickly because it was just banging up on various things underwater, so it was getting dangerous for the people using it. So we ditched that pretty quickly. And then you'd see people floating in the water, but there was no boat there at the stage, so you'd wait for the boat to come back and you'd say, oh, someone's drifted down that way. And it was unreal. It was only much, much later that we realised that pretty much everyone in that area had been picked up. So it was unreal to think that actually everyone, what we saw, people drifting down in the floodwater, they all ended up getting picked up, which was really good. As people were coming off the boat, we were putting them into Silky Oak because at that time Silky Oak had no water in it. And so we were kind of using that as a bit of a base where people could go and sort of get warm and have a few warm drinks and stuff like that. But as the morning progressed, the car park started to fill up with water. And so we very quickly sort of had to then usher everybody out of Silky Oak. And at this point, we're all standing on the high point up on the road. So that was quite interesting. We had to, at one point, then go back, which I didn't realise. There's a beautiful villa behind, big, beautiful old house behind Silky Oak where the owner lives. And she got quite frantic at one stage because she had some medication she needed to get. And so we almost felt like a Dukes of Hazzard sort of a thing, and jumping into a car, driving through the water and back to this woman's house so she could get her meds, and then quickly going back out to the road after she got them. It felt really odd. But so at that stage, the boat was not coming back with anyone anymore. And by this stage, we weren't really hearing anyone else. And you could see the whole time you were at Silky Oak, and I mean, the car park started to fill up, and you could watch the torrent of water coming down. It was slowly moving its way up the road as it was getting wider, and there was more and more water. And so eventually we got to the point that we thought, right, there's nothing much we can do here. The guys who had brought the jet boat down actually had a big truck, and so they threw the boat in the truck and loaded up all of the people that had been pulled out of the water into the back of this truck. And then so we drove off. But during the, I'd say probably just over an hour and a bit that we were at the Silky Oak Chocolate Factory, that's when Puckawai started flooding. So we got to the other end of Lynx Road and realised that we were actually somewhat trapped. So the entire Lynx Road, Puckawai and Expressway roundabout was underwater at that stage. And that's where I was quite thankful that I didn't have my own car, because my own car would have drowned. But we had to go up on the curb on the footpath next to the roundabout there, and it was up to the bonnet at that point. And then thankfully we made it around and back up on the expressway heading north to Napier. As we were heading up towards the Tutaikiri again, we thought, oh yep, it's all good. But when we got to the bridge, which was when we were heading there, it was just up below it. Mm. Now it was actually lapping against the bridge itself, the water, and it had started to collect a lot of timber in behind it. And there was a roading engineer there who was also stuck on our side, and he was quite frantically telling people do not go across it because the bridge could give way at any moment, because it had a lot of pressure built up on the side of it. So we sat there for a while, and it was about this time that all of the phone signal was about to go down, because I remember trying to call my partner, Kate, and she, I was trying to tell her what was going on, but the phone was, it was starting to go in and out of service at that point. So she got enough of a message to say that I was okay, but it was, that things weren't great. So we hung on the southern side of the bridge for a while. But again, the whole time when we looked behind us back towards Puckawai Road, you could see the water coming further up, and it was just, and the bridge was just getting more and more timber and more slash sort of built up behind it. And so we thought, well, we have to do something, because if we get stuck here, we're going to be really stuck here. So we had a couple of policemen with us too, and we all decided that it was, we'll just go one car at a time across the bridge, and just to go slowly. I think we only went about 10 k's an hour along the whole bridge, and I don't think I breathed the entire time we were going across. But not only did all of the cars make it, but the truck with all the people in it made it as well. Yeah, and then when we got to the other side of it, that's where it all kind of, we were like, okay, right, we're back on the right side of it and we're okay. So, yeah, that was quite unreal. We then went back home and had a bit of a debrief, caught up with the family and sort of let everybody know what was going on and all that sort of thing. But after that, a few of our volunteers continued in Esk Valley, and at that stage, I went back. At the stage, I had at the time, I had an old military Land Rover actually, which could sit about 10 people in it. And so it was at that stage that we found that we heard through the again through the Coast Guard communications that they, that's when Puckawai was really flooding. This was probably, I lose track of what the time was. It was probably late morning at the stage on that Tuesday. And Puckawai was really flooding. So, and there was a lot of people being evacuated. So I took the old Landy and went down there, and we went basically back to where we were. And so when I turned up there at the stage, there was lots of police cars, and there were surf IRBs, there were private jet boats, there were all sorts. And this was just, this was where we had been earlier. This was on the just on the southern side of the Tutaikiri on the expressway, and it was basically being used as a boat ramp area straight off the expressway. And there were jet boats just taking off down towards Puckawai, and they were bringing back the RSE workers and anyone who lived down Pakwai Road, and they were all being brought back to the expressway area where they were either loaded into police cars, and then I took a load as well, and we were taking them to the various the civil defence centres, which was Green Meadows, I think we were taking people to one of the churches, and Green Meadows was being used as a civil defence sort of gathering area. Mm-hmm. But I just remember it was unreal when you're standing on the expressway, just watching the road go into the water, and then just it was unreal with these jet boats just going back and forth and helicopters whizzing overhead and all of that sort of thing. It was it was quite the experience. We then so after that we kind of caught. I sort of called it a bit of a day. We needed to, of course, we had no power at home at that stage, so we had to figure out sort of what we were doing with food and all that sort of thing. But over the next few days, we were hearing all sorts of reports. You know, when this sort of thing happens and communication goes down, and you get people start hearing this and people start hearing that, and at Coast Guard, because we didn't have any of our usual methods of communication out to verify information, and neither did the police in a lot of ways, we were just reacting to things. So at one stage people were saying, oh, there's bodies being washed out of the Esk Valley River, and so we'd deploy the boat and we'd go and we'd try to find things. And of course, well, thankfully, there wasn't any. Not that it had been swept out to sea, and certainly not in the quantity that people were reporting as well. Mm. So, but it was unreal to look at the amount of stuff, debris that was in the water. Just there was just trees, logs, whatever you can think of, the amount of apple bins, they're just hundreds and hundreds and thousands of apple bins and apples and fruit and just floating out to sea. So much so that we couldn't actually get too close to the river mouth itself, because our boat was just sucking in too much debris and it was getting dangerous for us. So over the next few days we would go out for multiple scans and searches and stuff like that, but they we would run into problems left, right and centre just with the amount of stuff in the water. So we became our experience sort of became a bit of a search and rescue hub for all of the other emergency services, mm-hmm. such as surf life saving and bits and pieces like that. Mm-hmm. So we were able to facilitate that at our Coast Guard base, and that's sort of what we did for the rest of the time until power came back on, and then eventually our access ways got opened up again, and mm-hmm. We just provided support doing all of that. Mm-hmm. So, it was a very, very interesting time for us. And it's like, even now, I think back to that, especially that time in Lynx Road when we, I still think, and it's like, I remember standing there sort of having to pinch yourself going, is this actually happening? It's, mm-hmm. and unless you sort of actually see it and experience it, it's hard to sort of describe.
has the experience all left a lasting effect on you at all?
I wouldn't say a lasting effect. Mm. But it has made me a bit more conscious of what sort of nature can do. And there's a lot of things that you sort of take for granted. You know, you see the stop banks and you see what and you go, oh, we're going to be fine because of this. We're going to be fine because of that. And then I guess what it's made me realize is that that's not necessarily true. Yeah. If Mother Nature's going to do her thing, she's going to do her thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the days following when Te Awa flooded, my in-laws lived down Te Awa Ave, and I remember we'd go and visit them in the days afterwards. And, you'd just be standing up on their balcony and they'd have waterfront views on both sides of the house, which doesn't normally happen. But, and the eerie thing about that was when Te Awa was flooding is that the weather was actually quite nice. And it was this very surreal kind of time. But yeah, it was.
How long were you at, was your house out of power?
Our house was out of power for about 4 days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 4 days. I think it was the Friday morning that we came back on.
Were you quite prepared with the house? You know, like, did you have to, you know, empty your freezer or anything like that? Or
Thankfully, we had a relatively new fridge. So it seals on it were fantastic. So we could, it was, it actually probably less than ideal, but it was still mostly frozen when the power came back on. So it wasn't too bad. But we got quite inventive with a few things. Like we found that, because we're on a gas hot water system, so we found that if you started the car and plugged the Califont into the car, you could have a hot shower. So we had extension cables running everywhere. And one of our neighbours worked for an engineering company, so he brought I think it was on the second or third day, he brought a big generator on a trailer and parked it in the middle of the street. And then we had extension cords running off and to 5 or 6 houses while this big generator chugged away for a day. So we were able to top phones up and refreeze the freezer and stuff like that. So it was interesting. We did have a 4-month-old at the time. So we had our son would have been 11 and our little girl was 4 months old. So it was interesting having a baby during that time. But, you know, we just made the most of it. Like our 11-year-old, it was a good, him and his mates just went down to a park and would kick a ball around. It was a, they were forced to be off the screens for a while, which was which was good. But
and what about the community spirit around you?
Like, yeah, that was, there was a lot of that. Like like I say, there was our neighbour had bought the generator and was quite happy for everyone to share the power there, and yeah, it was people were checking in on each other. Colleagues at work were popping around and everyone was sort of checking on each other. All my work colleagues were checking on each other. So it was, it's funny, it might sound a little bit cliche, but it sort of brings out the best in people, that sort of situation. Just everyone was keen to lend a hand and do what they could. So it was, yeah, it was good in that regard.
So did you carry on after things had sort of settled a little bit with your work? Did you work from home for a while or were you able to go back to your offices?
We were able to go back to our offices. We're just based in town. So so once the power was back on, I think the power came back on Friday. And back on Monday, we were back in the office, everyone sharing their stories. But, yeah, like I say, work was really good. Our bosses were coming and checking on us and during the time the power was out. And, yeah, they made it very clear to me that in the weeks following, if there was anything that I needed to do from a Coast Guard point of view, that was the first priority. Thankfully, we didn't really have anything to continue on with, but that was there too. So it was, but, yeah, from the next Monday, it was pretty much business as usual.
Yeah, and so Coast Guard Hawke's Bay working with Landsars and the police and all the other organisations, you sort of all support each other and you know have ways to communicate with each other if a disaster happens.
And Cyclone Gabrielle was also, we learned a lot of lessons out of Cyclone Gabrielle. Just around communication and how much we rely on things like the cell phone network and stuff like that. So if there's any silver lining to Gabrielle is that it's meant that there's a lot of systems and stuff like that which have been able to be upgraded and contingencies put in place for if something like that happens again, that the communication will be better because, yeah, like I say, it was back to like the dark old days for a little while. But yes, no, we do have a very good, excuse me, we have a very good relationship with our other agencies that we work with, the police, fire, the ambulance, surf life saving, Landsar. And our building down in Miani Key, is really well set up to be able to host a number of different agencies. So it was being used as a bit of a command centre as well as the Napier Fire Station. And it really strengthened a lot of the relationships between the agencies. As a result of Gabriel, now Surf Life Saving actually use our building to store a lot of their equipment, which they didn't do before. So, yeah, it's strengthened some of the relationships there, which is good.
That's excellent. Well, shall we leave it there then?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alex. That's just been so interesting and horrifying as well.
Yeah.
So, yep. Thanks a lot.